At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
A warm up from the low. Welcome to Love You Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson. Now a part of the VSIN family of podcasts, we've got a tremendous podcast for you guys. Joining me in segment number two, we're going to have Brian Rolfe, who does amazing work over at HXCBB. We're going to be talking about a little bit of everything. We're going to give you guys a small preview of UNC versus Duke. We're going to be diving into sort of the top teams in all of college basketball debate. If there is some things to be concerned about with Purdue, why there might be a little bit of concern with Tennessee right now, and players to watch that could lead their teams on big NCAA tournament runs as well. We're also going to talk a little Mountain West because we've got some good Mountain West play that is going to be going down today. So a nice wide-ranging chat with Brian in segment number two. In the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we eat some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what I have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at @JNNR41. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way, that is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Got in a very interesting question from Goat Golf. He asks, do you use points per game as a correlation with regards to spread? Like, for example, player X will not play tonight, averages 14 points per game, so that moves the spread 2 points. Assuming you count 1 point for every 7 points that a player averages. So essentially, every 7 points per game someone averages, you deduct a point from that team. And the way that I do it with regards to players that are in slash out of the fold is that every single one of them is their own living, breathing entity. Like, we're going to have Sienna on tap today. They've been without their top scorer, Javion McCollum, and I really haven't knocked them at all because Sienna has honestly played better without their top scorer. We've noticed this with Cal as well. Devin Askew, whenever he's been out, Cal has been significantly better without him than they have been with him. And then there are some guys that they only put up like 6-7 points per game, but they make a big impact to the line. Like, he averages a little bit more than this, but Caleb Grill, we've seen how meaningful he is to that Iowa State team. If he's out of the fold, in my opinion, he's worth multiple points to the line. It's not just all about points per game, and there are some guys being out of the fold that sometimes it's almost an addition by subtraction. So every one of these I do sort of on its own merit, and there are certain coaches that they do a great job with the next man up mentality, and there are some teams that they do a terrible one. I'll highlight one of the really good ones, Drake. I still remember a few years ago in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament, literally half the team was injured, and they still very nearly won that thing. That was the year where they covered like 70-some-odd percent of their games. So there are some coaches that they do a really good job of mixing and matching, and there are some times where having a star player out isn't necessarily a doomsday scenario as well, which I always think is very important, and that's some of the issues with handicapping. That's some of the fun of handicapping, and that's just some of the landmines that we all have to try to persevere through. So I do appreciate that question. Thank you so much. Now, let's take a look back at everything that we've seen from late Wednesday into Thursday in college basketball. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
Doing a little bit of a recap from late Wednesday as well, because as you guys know, the Greg Peterson Experience, that is on VSiN from 9 to midnight Pacific time. If you're looking out there on the East Coast, midnight to 3, so I do have to do these recaps a little bit earlier, and I was on the right side of this one. If you were on the wrong side, thoughts and prayers to you there. But Marquette, they're now 16-6-1 against the spread. That's tied for the most covers in all of college basketball in terms of cover rate. And that is a top 25 percentile cover rate in all of college basketball. Actually, top 25 overall. But they take down Villanova by 9 points in a game where I have absolutely no idea why Villanova was bonsai charging the rim towards the end of the game. But that is what happened there, as Marquette got the job done by a count of 73-64 in a game where they really weren't leading until about 4 minutes remaining in this one. Villanova just completely toilet bowled this game, as you had Tyler Kolick take over this game for Marquette. He was able to chip in there 20 points, 6 assists. Villanova does go 11-27 from 3, but lost the turnover battle 19-7. Marquette goes 9-25 from the free throw line, and Villanova decides to try to go for dunks down 3 possessions to make it a 3-possession game towards the end of the game. So that was not too terrific there. You saw Drake in double overtime be able to get the job done against Northern Iowa, 88-81. No cover there, but for Drake, a very impressive performance because they were without a few ancillary pieces in this one as well. You did have Tucker DeVries, who was a little bit questionable playing this one. He was obviously not himself with just 11 points. And for Northern Iowa, you had Bolin Bourne go 5 of 11 from 3. I think that he had 2 buzzer beaters to ensue the overtime and then the double overtime. But that said, very impressive performance from Drake. You also saw Oklahoma and Oklahoma State end in a little bit of a calamity. The over was the right side all along, but it looked like the under was going to cash because Oklahoma State did not score in the final 308. You had a bunch of missed free throws towards the end of the game, and then you have a steal and a dunk from Oklahoma to be able to cash it over 71-61. I'm pretty sure Scott Van Pelt on Bad Beats is going to be broadcasting that one, but for the Cowboys, they get it done by a count of 71-61 over an Oklahoma team that they were coming off of that massive win against Alabama, and well, they were unable to follow that up. And then Utah State, they cash another over, and they take down New Mexico by a count of 84-73. In this one, Utah State, who entered into the night the top 3-point shooting team in all of college basketball, they went just 7-20, but went 27-31 at the charity stripe for New Mexico. They were able to have every one of their starters scoring double figures, but Utah State got more off the bench with Daniel Aiken coming in 16 points, 6 boards, 5 assists. Big-time performer for Utah State, so that was able to get it done for them. And then if you're taking a look at what we all got on Thursday, one of the top under teams in college basketball, well, they cash yet another under, and I'm talking about St. Francis of Brooklyn, as they were able to get the job done as a moneyline underdog, 53-48 against Central Connecticut. And you take a look at how they've been hitting unders, it's been pretty wild. 5 overs to 16 unders. Only Wagner and Merrimack, a pair of other teams out there in the NEC, have been doing better to the under. And, oh, by the way, Merrimack was in action, and they cashed yet another over. We have seen now 3 straight overs for Merrimack after they started out the year. 2 overs to 17 unders, 76-59 the final. I chalk this up to Long Island just being terrible. And for Long Island, they got outscored 8-0 in the final 5:23 to cost any shot of them getting to the window, as Merrimack, as a 14-point favorite, was able to cover. They were not covering until about the final, I would say, 2 minutes of this one, as Jordan Miner had 25 points. And for Long Island, it's been a sad and miserable year for them. Wagner, meanwhile, they were able to get you to the window on another under, 65-56. Total was 135 in their game against Sacred Heart. Sacred Heart was able to get the win. Wagner was able to get the under because, well, Wagner, they had 23 points in the first 25 minutes and change in this one. Delaney Hunt was able to chip in their 19 points, but the NEC, currently a big, giant haven of unders. UAB has been one of your best over teams in all of college basketball. And this one goes over, and UAB, with Jelly Walker back in the fold, they're able to win by a count of 86-77. My personal observations, you can agree slash disagree. Jelly Walker, who came in off the bench for 27 minutes, didn't look 100%, but he did do a good job of being used as a little bit of a decoy and did a good job of passing. He had 6 assists, 13 points, just 2 of 10 from 3 point range. UAB goes 6 of 20 from 3. Florida Atlantic just had a big clunker of a night. They went as a whole 6 of 33 from 3 point range. Nicholas Boyd, he goes 4 of 10 from 3. Rest of the team, they went 4 of 26 from three-point range. So that really doomed Florida Atlantic UAB. They're able to get the job done. They're able to get the win. They're able to get the cover on that front. Another team that has been very good to the over is Denver. We don't know how this game shook out. Total was 148, and we've seen 63 points at the half. So got to figure that their over rate of 16-6 probably going to be going a little bit downward here, but they're up 41-22 at the half on a Western Illinois team that was coming in, I believe, on a five-game win streak. So certainly of intrigue out there. And you also had South Dakota State, a team that was not so great towards the beginning part of the year. They completely dump-trucked our good friend North Dakota, 96-73. So it looks like they're getting back online and they're starting to cash you some tickets once again. Kennesaw State, we give our ode to Lane Kiffin here. Go Owls. They have been one of their more profitable teams in all of college basketball, and they played an exciting one. Not quite going to compare to the one that we're going to be going to in the Horizon League, but as of right now, you've got a game that is in double overtime between they and Bellarmine. Kennesaw State was laying 3.5 points, so we're going to see how that one shakes out while we go to the Horizon League for the game that just wrapped up after triple overtime. Youngstown State gets it done against Wright State by kind of 91-89 for Wright State. They were the right side if you took the points, as Youngstown State goes just 6 of 31 from 3. This team came into the week ranked number 1 in the country in terms of offensive efficiency, and that's going to be going downward with this game. But of note, Trey Calvin, 44 points in a losing effort. He had a 3 that sent this game into triple overtime, and the last shot that was taken in double overtime is the reason why the total over hits and the reason why we did see triple overtime. So that was very intriguing. And how about this team going on a little bit of a nice against the spread run? IUPUI, they lose, but they get the cover against UW-Milwaukee by a count of 72-69. And for good old IUPUI, all of a sudden, they've been able to cash you some tickets. Their game against Detroit on most numbers was a push. So if we assume a push there, they went 4-0-1 against the spread in their last five games. So you know what? IUPUI has been able to cash some tickets recently, and good for those that have been backing them. A team that has been relatively solid against the spread is UTEP, currently at the half. They're down 38-31 against Middle Tennessee. So we shall see if they keep things going, and we shall see if this team is going to be able to keep things going as well. As Liberty has been laying some big numbers. They've been able to cover all sorts of them this season. Right now it's in the closing seconds. They're up 77-63 on Austin Peay, and it looks like they're not going to quite get there on the cover, but still a relatively solid performance from Liberty. They're going to go to 13-7-1 against the spread, as Liberty went 6-16 from three-point range in this game. Austin Peay, the only reason why they cover, they go 9-18 from three-point range. A little bit uncharacteristic of them, and it's a Liberty squad that has been able to do a really good job all season long of just being able to bear down on defense in general as well. So they're an intriguing team to watch out for. What else is very intriguing to watch out for is some of the teams are somewhat of fades. I mentioned Long Island a little bit before and the fact that they did not cover. 5-14-1 against the spread for them. That's relatively grody. Northern Kentucky has not been a good cover team, but they were able to get there against Robert Morris. 65-52, the final. Northern Kentucky has been playing their nice, slow brand of basketball. Enoch Cheeks, 20 points for Robert Morris, but that was it. And Marquise Warwick, who's averaging about 18.5 points per game for one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball, he was able to throw in their 21. So a good quality win and cover out there. You've had a few Sun Belt teams that have been somewhat of fades this year, and Arkansas State, they're at the forefront. They're now riding a 9-game losing streak, and they now fall to against the spread 6-14-1. They got completely dump-trucked by 20 points against South Alabama, as South Alabama goes 7-18 from three-point range. Kevin Samuel down low, 10 of 11 from the floor with 20 points. Isaiah Moore gives you more with 23 points, and it's just very befuddling as to what you're getting out of Malcolm Farrington right now, as he was one of the team's top three-point shooters towards the beginning part of the season. He did not appear to suit up in this one as well, so that's been relatively rough. I mentioned Villanova a little bit earlier, and they're non-cover. They fall to 7-15 against the spread, so that has not been too tremendous. Your other big fade out there in the Sun Belt, though, that'd be Georgia State. They entered into the night 5-13-1 against the spread, and they just barely cover as a three-point favorite against Georgia Southern, as Georgia State gets it done 64-60. They were laying 3. Brendan Tucker was able to throw in their 20 points, and Georgia State 5 of 18 from three-point range. They were able to do just enough in this game as Georgia Southern, they had 19 made buckets and they had 15 turnovers in a game that was pretty unsightly sad to watch. And if you're taking a look at college basketball right now, it has been all about overs recently as the over in college basketball has really been hitting. If you take a look at the entirety of the season, 1,918 overs, 1,045 unders, and you certainly have had some pushes thrown in there as well, but about 51% of games have been going over. Home underdogs have also been good all season long, 558, 498, and 22 against the spread. That is 52.8%, but we have noticed that the home underdogs have been drying up over the last 3 days. Last 3 days, 234, 230, and 15 against the spread, so that's more around 50.5% in this time span of the last 30 days. 773 overs to 689 unders. That is darn near 53% of games going over the total. And if you're looking a little bit more at a smaller sample size, the last 7 days, home underdogs 50, 50, and 3 against the spread, so dead equal, and overs hitting at 53.6%, 164 and 142 with some games from Thursday still pending. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we all got on Wednesday into Thursday. Coming up next, a nice wide-ranging chat with Brian Rolfe of HXCBB. Going to be talking a little Mountain West. We're going to be talking about the vulnerabilities with Tennessee. Are there some vulnerabilities with Purdue? We're also going to be talking about a team in Creighton that myself and he are both very bullish on and give you a little bit of a preview of UNC and Duke. That's up next right here on Coast Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now a part of the Easton Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. It is always great to be joined by our guest as Brian Rolfe does amazing work over at HXCBB. He is also the host of the HXCBB Hangout, which I know that they do a great job breaking down the game of basketball really on both platforms. Brian does an amazing job taking a look at the great game of college basketball. And he's out there in the great state of North Carolina. If only we would have, I don't know, some sort of a rivalry matchup going on this weekend out in that great state. And to be able to follow Brian on Twitter, that's at BRolf33 altogether. And Brian, Great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Greg. I appreciate it.
I do appreciate you. And, well, I just teased it. So why don't we dive into it? I know that you do a great job of really gauging all things college basketball. But with that said, with you having boots on the ground in the state of North Carolina, how do you feel about what we're going to be seeing in North Carolina versus Duke on Saturday? Because for North Carolina, they come in with yet another loss against Pittsburgh. I have no idea how and I have no idea why, but that has become the kryptonite all of a sudden of the North Carolina Tar Heels. And shout out to our good friend Tristan Freeman. He's able to cover some good basketball this year. But I take a look at this matchup, and it is so intriguing because both of these teams, I honestly think, have some upside when it comes to the NCAA tournament. But both of these teams have massive woes. For North Carolina, it's the defensive side of things. And for Duke, it's the offensive side of things.
Yeah, it's a really big matchup because both teams kind of need this one. Neither have been playing up to the level we really expected them to. This is a game that can be a momentum builder for you going forward. It's in Cameron, and I know that the stakes are different this year than last year, and it's not the last game of the season, but this was the game that really propelled UNC on their run in March, was beating Duke in Cameron, Coach K's last game. So we know what this game means. We know what it entails. And while they're not both top five or top 10 teams, like the best matchups in this rivalry have been, I think it's crucial for two teams that are still kind of trying to find their way. Having a win in this matchup under their belt, I think, could propel them to some good things down the stretch here.
Oh, no question about it. And do you lean either side in this game as of right now? Because when it comes to this matchup, I do honestly think that North Carolina has just a little bit more talent on their side. At the same time, I think that Duke, they've got more upside in general. So it's just such an intriguing matchup because a more offensive style game, I think, favors North Carolina. If this game is slowed down, if this is sort of a drag them out sort of fight, I think that that lends a little bit more in favor.
Yeah, I would give the edge to UNC if Derek Whitehead was playing and healthy. I think it's a different conversation, but he's not. We don't know if he's going to play, but if he does, he's not going to be 100%. UNC is a team that can handle Duke size, and that's how Duke overwhelms some teams with the rebounding and just play down low. It's not going to be a factor with UNC. UNC has better guards than Duke does. It's going to be a close game. Like, I don't really see a huge edge either side, but in that case, if you have Armando Bacot, probably the best player on the court, UNC has the best guards. That's been the case for UNC in most games this season, though, and it hasn't always translated to wins. But I think this is the kind of game that could get us UNC's best. I'll lean Tar Heels.
I don't blame you there. I do think that this is going to be a lot of fun to take a look at this weekend. And, I mean, this game encapsulates a lot of what we've seen all season long in college basketball. As Ryan Rolfe, who does amazing work over at HeatCheckCBB, is joining me on the podcast. And that's that the top team just have not been necessarily able to get out of their own way. We've seen a lot of landmines that all these teams have really been tripped up by. And when I take a look at things right now, I don't think that it's like they're a clear and obvious number one team. But that said, perhaps the most bulletproof team in all of college basketball right now is the number one team in Purdue. Just because even on an off shooting night, when you got a guy in 7'4", Zach Edey, you're able to overcome a lot of things. Now, that also means that if he gets into foul trouble, that could leave them very susceptible as well. But I just take a look at all of these top teams in college basketball. They all have their warts, and it's just right now trying to find which one has the least of them. And I honestly think that Purdue, as of right now, they've got the least of them.
Yeah, Purdue has to be the number one team in the country. You look at their resume, simply the fact that they haven't really lost. All the other teams have had their warts kind of come back to bite them. And Purdue has been able to overcome, you know, poor shooting nights, off games from Zach Edey, simply because they, A, have Zach Edey down low and the presence he commands. A bad game for Zach Edey, he's still getting you 10 to 15 rebounds and 10 to 15 points. That's not a bad day. The guards are playing better. They've maintained somewhat of the level they played at early the season. Fletcher Lawyer has become the guy for them late in close games, which is good to see, because that's something that they need to have translate to the NCAA tournament. I still have more questions about them. Come tournament time, you have a freshman backcourt starting. You do have question marks on the perimeter, and that means a lot more in March in that one-game sample size, the do-or-die scenarios, than it does during the regular season. We've seen that time and time again. So I think regular season, Purdue is very clearly the best team in the country. I think they could probably lose a game at this point and still be number one. But they are not the clear-cut number one team for me when it comes to projecting NCAA tournament success. I think they're still in that top tier, top two tiers. The questions we have about them that they've been able to answer so far aren't questions about their viability, at least at this point. They're not questions about their viability in the regular season and the rest of the Big Ten schedule. It's about, okay, can you win six straight games against top-tier competition with a freshman backcourt and questions on the perimeter.
And I think that the question that we're all asking right now is, who could be that team that's sort of on the outside looking in that we're not thinking about, that could be that team that makes a lot of noise, because it feels like it's going to be a wide open NCAA tournament this year. And I know that in your most recent Ralph report that was put out a couple of days ago, you highlighted a team that I'm very high on, ironically enough. I faded them a couple of days ago and managed to get to the window with it, and that'd be Creighton. Creighton, they only won by 10 against Georgetown, so fortunately I was able to get that one in on that front. But that said, I take a look at this Creighton team, and I've been very impressed by them. Their metrics are very skewed right now, because there was a time when they either had Ryan Kalkbrenner out of the fold or Ryan Kalkbrenner at less than 100%. But ever since he has come back, team has won 8-2. They have scored at least 73 points in all two of these games. This looks like a completely different team, and it's a Creighton team that I don't know why they weren't ranked in the top 25 by the AP poll, and it goes to show the issues that we've got with the AP poll right now. But they're a team that I think has a lot of upside and is going to be very scary in March if they continue on this upward trajectory that they've been showing.
They do. You know, Kalkbrenner's injury played a role in their six-game losing streak they had in December, as did poor three-point shooting, which partially came from not having the inside threat to make defenses worry about. But remember that Texas game they played in Austin? That game, I think they started like 1-for-16 or 1-for-18 from three, missing good looks. Like, a lot of that stretch, too, was them just missing shots they normally make. They were in a bit of a funk. Now they've kind of gotten that back, and they have a healthy Kalkbrenner going. They're playing much more like the team we saw in November than what we saw during that stretch in December. And I think we need to kind of recalibrate that and say, okay, maybe that team in November is really who this Creighton team is. And they're going to have opportunities the next couple of weeks to prove that. But I certainly lean more on them being in that camp than I do of them being the bubble team they were a couple weeks ago.
I'm in agreement with you there. I like what I'm seeing out of this team, and I do think that they're going to be able to continue to trend upward as well, and I think a big key for them as well that not a lot of people are talking about. Ryan Nemhard, when he was out there on the court last season, was walking turnover. He has certainly rectified those issues as well as joining me on the podcast. We got Brian Rolfe, who does amazing work over at HeatCheckCBB. And Brian, as we know, not the most rambunctious of slates on Friday. It's really the Saturday slate where we've got 100 million billion games, and I'm going to be having to handicap games for like 48 straight hours. That is going to be really what we're taking a look at. But one thing that I do notice for Friday is that the Mountain West is going to be on full display, and I've been really impressed by this conference. We're going to get a nice big bomber matchup between Boise State and San Diego State that I am very much looking forward to. What have been your overall thoughts on the Mountain West? Because I know that you've been following this conference very closely over the last year or two, and I think that a lot of people are surprised by how well the Mountain West has been playing, and I think that they're in good position to perhaps get four teams in the NCAA tournament.
I think so, too. There is not the top-end team in the Mountain West that I think we thought there was going to be really through the first month of the season. Coming into the season, I thought San Diego State was good enough to really run away with the league, and I thought the league would be good. Their offense has not progressed the way I would have expected or San Diego State fans would have hoped, but it's still a team that can beat anybody in the country on any given night because of their defense. And they do have some offensive potential when they are able to run and not be slowed down in a half-court game all the time. You know, New Mexico was the last undefeated team in the country and has one of the best backcourts in the country, Jamal Mashburn and Jalen House. You have those two. They're good teams. They're not great teams, but they're good teams. And that's where you get to the depth of the league. Boise State, you mentioned, was projected to be solid this year, but lost a lot from the team that swept the Mountain West regular season and tournament titles last year. And they've been able to maintain in the Leon Rice. That's been great. UNLV has had some up and downs, but they were one of the last undefeated teams in the country as well. Colorado State has struggled with injuries, but they still have perhaps the best player in the entire conference in Isaiah Stevens, who can throw a wrench into some things as well. Nevada keeps things going under Steve Alford, and really has been, at least for me, the biggest surprise in the conference with their level of play. You can go up and down this league, and outside of maybe Air Force, every team is dangerous and can beat you on any given night. We haven't even talked, I haven't mentioned San Jose State and Tim Miles, what they've done his second year. They're doing things they have not done in a very, very long time. It's not at the same level of the teams at the top, but they're competitive in a way they have not been in a while. So you look at this league top to bottom, it's a very, very fun league and one that is earning respect nationally, but I still don't think it's enough credit for how deep it is.
I agree with you. And the team that everyone looks at on the national level is San Diego State. I'm not sure what your thoughts have been, but I take a look at this upcoming matchup that they're going to be having against Boise State, and I think Boise State has a very real chance of being able to win this game, and I'm starting to think that Boise State might be the best team in this conference. I don't know if maybe I'm off my rocker a little bit and give it too much of a hot take, but I really like what this Boise State team is doing, and I think that they could be one of those teams that, if the bracket breaks right, they could be a team that finds themselves in the second week of the tournament.
I think there's that potential. I'm not as excited about them as you. I think they're certainly a very good team, but a big part of their success is how connected they are on both ends of the floor and the chemistry, right? The whole getting more out of the sum of your parts than the five individuals on the court, right? Certainly it's something that Leon Rice has preached and it's coming to fruition here, but when you get into those tournament games, you need a guy who can, or a couple guys who can go get you a bucket and go make a play on either end. And Boise State has gotten some of that this year, but I don't know if there's anybody that you can rely on to do that on a game-to-game basis when it gets to the NCAA tournament. Right matchup can win a game, but I think you're looking at maybe a one-game cap there for Boise. But that doesn't mean I think they can win the Mountain West regular season title. I think they could win even the Mountain West tournament, but I just think it gets to that the lacking of top-end talent in the NCAA tournament is something that could come back to hurt them.
I think that that's a fair criticism. You don't necessarily have that one takeover player. You've just got a lot of guys that they sort of are the know your role sort of guys. So I do think that that is going to be something that could be a little bit of a limiter, but have loved the way that they have been playing all season long. It's Brian Rolfe, who does amazing work over at HeatCheckCBB, is joining me on the podcast. And Brian, when you take a look at the landscape of college basketball as well, we talked about a team in Creighton that I think both of us are very bullish on. I think that they're going to be able to ascend as the season goes along. Has there been another team, maybe two or three teams, that you've been taking a look at and either you're very much stock up on them or very much stock down on them and you need to see more from them in the next few weeks to be able to accurately gauge them? Because I think that taking a look at Illinois, they're really starting to ascend in the Big Ten. I really like what I'm seeing out of them. We already mentioned Creighton a little bit before. And then I do just take a look at what we're going to be getting moving forward out of Tennessee. And the defense is amazing, but I just still consistently have to fear those bad shooting nights like we saw against Florida. Where a few teams are really standing out to you that you want to see a little bit more from them moving forward because you're either stock up or stock down on them?
Yeah, Tennessee was the big one. It's the same story for Tennessee every single season where their defense is great. They play well enough, especially against like the mid-tier teams, to post great metrics, look like they're in a position to make a run, and then they just throw up those consistent kind of offensive clunkers that keep them from making a run. And doing that this week against Florida does not give me confidence that this team's any different. It's not the first one they've thrown up this year. They've thrown one up about every 3 or 4 weeks this season. I'm expecting the tournament to end the same way unless they look like an offensive juggernaut hero over the last month. And even then, I might not believe it. But two teams I'm looking at, and the background of this is that we've talked a lot about the parity in college basketball this year and how everybody stinks, for lack of a better term. And it feels a lot like a 2011 type season where a single player can lead his team on a really long run in the NCAA tournament. Yeah, I have two guys I'm interested in looking at, Kendrick Davis at Memphis and Jalen Pickett at Penn State. Both of those guys play for teams that aren't tournament locks right now. Penn State's really more in the bubble. And then I think Memphis is, but those are two guys with two teams that play distinct styles that can give opponents headaches. And again, that one game sample size, do or die scenario in the NCAA tournament. I'll be the best guards on the court in pretty much every game they play. If those teams can close strong and go into the NCAA tournament, well, one, make the NCAA tournament, but two, go into the tournament with some momentum, I think those are teams that potentially be those kind of off the radar, do some real damage teams in the tournament because of the way Davis and Pickett play. I want to see how those two come on here down the stretch of the last month to see if there's any credence behind that or if it's just something that they just have a really good player.
And I do think that Jalen Pickett certainly deserves some love for being a All-American. He has been playing that well this year. I mean, how you put up 16 points, 7 boards, 7 assists consistently like he does is absolutely incredible. Defense sometimes leaves a little bit of something to be desired. I think we both agree this team does have their struggles when they do face off against some bigger guys, although they did handle Hunter Dickinson and Trace Jackson Davis quite well. So there's that going for them as well. And a man that's got everything going for them because he does absolutely amazing work over there at HeatCheckCBB. That'd be you, Brian. Always do appreciate you joining the show. I know that you've got a lot on tap. You guys over there at HeatCheckCBB do an amazing job gauging college basketball. So let the good people at home know what they can expect from you the next few weeks, and how they can follow all your work on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, all the end of regular season, pre-conference tournament, pre-NC tournament prep you could possibly want, you can find up on HeatCheckCBB.com. You can follow us on Twitter at HeatCheckCBB, or myself, as you mentioned at the top, at BRAUF33. It's BRAUF33.
And Brian does absolutely amazing work taking a look at the game of college basketball every single time he joins this podcast. Always lends tremendous insights, much like he did today. So big thanks, Brian, for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eves Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It's always great to get Brian Rolfe aboard. He does amazing work over at HeatCheckCBB, taking a look at the great game of college basketball. It's been an absolutely topsy-turvy season. We've seen a lot of interest in terms of the top teams in college basketball not getting the job done, and we're going to have ourselves an amazing weekend of college basketball. So a big thanks to Brian for getting us set for that and lending his insights on the podcast today. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at GNNR41. Going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order, and this is time order today. We do not have any games on the extra games board, so just nice, clean, and easy there. So that keeps things short with the explanation, and Now we can dive in. 861-862 on the betting board. Yale is the road faceoff against Harvard. Harvard is a 3 to 3.5 point home underdog, and your total on this game is between 133 and 134. And I did set my total at 127.5. I'm diving under. You've got two really good defenses. Harvard 70th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Yale 31st. Now I will say for Yale, defense has been a little bit more shaky recently. They had that stretch against Brown and Cornell where they gave up 78-plus points in back-to-back games. But last time these two teams played, Yale got the job done on their home floor, 58-54, and since that little bit of a rough patch, gave up 63 to Penn, 65 to Princeton. So it looks like they're right back online. This is not a Yale team that's going to go out there and get a bunch of steals. They just do a really good job of being able to rebound by committee, and they guard you off the bus. You take a look at this bunch, and you pretty much have six different guys that give you at least three rebounds per game. E.J. Jarvis, Matt Noling, they do a good job with their post defense as they've been able to combine for 25 points, about 10.5 rebounds per game. And Jarvis does shoot 38% from three. It is a Yale team that they shoot 35% from the outside. Yale also does shoot about 67.5% at the free throw line. Harvard leaves a lot to be desired with their offense. They shoot only about 30% from three, but they're going to have the best peer player in this game. That would be Chris Ludlam. He is a monster down low. A block, 1.6 steals, 19 points, nearly 9 rebounds per game. He gets a little bit of help with about 7.5 points, 5.7 rebounds out of Sam Silverstein, 6'6" combo player. That does shoot about 30% from three, and it feels like everyone on this Harvard team shoots about 30% from three-point range, aside from their main facilitator, Evan Nelson, who's been able to give you 7.5 points, 3.5 assists, shoots more in the pocket, about 36% from three. He's had 9-plus points in each of the last three games, at least 7 points in each of the last five. Doesn't sound like much, but it's helping out this Harvard bunch as they've been able to get to at least 68 points in three of their last four games. You go to that 58-54 slobber knocker that we saw first time around. Harvard, a traditionally bad three-point shooting team, should be better than 9 of 35 from three-point range. That was a game where both teams turned it over 15 times. I think that it's going to be a slog once again. It's hard to see much different happening in this one, other than the fact that I do think that Harvard going to be able to knock down a few more shots. Ludlam in that first game, 15 points, 14 rebounds. I think that he's going to come to play as well. And then in that first game, Eden Traitot, he was able to chip in their 15 points overall for the season. Shoots 35% from three. He's really picked it up for this Harvard team. 11-plus points in each of the last five games. It is a Yale team that has been able to get back online, winning four out of their last five games. I think that both defenses are stout, but I do think that in the end, Harvard having the best player on the floor will allow them to get revenge on their home floor. I set Harvard as a 0.5 favorite. I'm going to be one to take them on the money line. I quite frankly don't think either team gets a 65, set my total at 127.5, so also diving under 863, 864 on the betting board. Brown, it's a road face-off against Dartmouth. Dartmouth is a 1-point underdog, so what can Brown do for you? Well, if they win outright, they should be able to make you money unless of this game lands one, and your total on this game is between 139 and 139.5. I made Brown a 2-point favorite. I'm willing to lay up to 1.5 with them. You've got a good backcourt with this Brown team, and a Brown bunch that has been relatively solid on defense. We have seen some slip-ups recently, but giving up north of 75 points to Cornell is pretty understandable. Brown overall for the season, they are 79th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, with Paxson Wojcik, Keno Lilly Jr. headlining things in the backcourt, 29.6 points. Wojcik is able to give you 3 assists, 7 rebounds per game, and both of these gentlemen and Lilly and Wojcik shoot a combined about 39.5% for 3. Now, your big trepidation with Brown, they shoot 59.5% at the free throw line. Neither of these teams are necessarily doing the world's greatest job of being able to light that up, as Dartmouth, they also turn the ball over 14 times a game, and Dartmouth is really playing at a new tempo this year. Typically, you see them play rather slow and controlled. They're about 90th in the country in terms of possessions per game. I'm not quite sure why. It hasn't necessarily resulted in very good offense. Brown, meanwhile, they're a mid-tempo team. They're about 160th in terms of possessions per game. And with this Brown team, they should be able to control things down low as well. Wojcik, who I mentioned, gives you 7 rebounds per game. But then you've got Nana Owusu-Anane along with Kalu Anaya. They combine for about 14 rebounds per game. Owusu-Anane is able to give you 2.5 assists, 1.6 steals, 11 points per contest. He does a nice job of filling up the stat sheet. Meanwhile, for Dartmouth, they shoot 33% from three-point range. You got Ryan Cornish in the backcourt, who's able to give you 13.5 points per game, and then Dame Edelkun, like Dusan Neskovic, they've been able to combine for 24 points, but Edelkun is the only guy that gives you north of 4 rebounds per game. He gives you 7.1 boards per contest. This is not a good rebounding team. They're not particularly a good shooting team. They don't generate any steals. They consistently lose a turnover battle. I don't know why Dartmouth has sped themselves up. They have been able to generate some offense recently, at least 70 points in four out of their last five games. But last time these two teams played, Brown was able to get the win by a count of 77-70. And in that game, Dartmouth shot 10 of 24 from three, something I don't think is sustainable. Now, Brown also shot 12 of 14 at the free throw line. That was above average, and they shot 9 of 20 from three-point range. Both teams turned the ball over just 11 times. I do think that Brown going to do a little bit of a better job of being able to generate some turnovers. It is a Brown team that they've had their woes on defense recently, giving up at least 70 points in each of their last five games. I do think that they're going to get back to basics. I do think that they're going to turn over a Dartmouth team that has had a very tough time holding on to the ball, and I do think that it's a Brown team that is going to be able to get their tempo in this game. So I did set Brown as a two-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the one that I'm seeing right now, and I did set my total at a 134 as well. Dartmouth is playing faster, but it's not really resulting in very efficient offense, so I'm going to be diving under, and I'm willing to lay the one with Brown. 865, 866 on the betting board. Eastern Michigan is going to be hitting the road face-off against Ball State. Ball State, an 11.5 to a 12.5 point favorite, and your total is 152.5 with Eastern Michigan. I set them as an underdog of 11.5 points, so here at the 12.5, I'm going to be willing to take those points. Eastern Michigan is going to have the best player out there on the floor now. What they're going to be able to surround him with is the question, because Imani Bates has been able to give the team 20.5 points. We saw that game against Toledo about a week ago where he was just on one with 43 points. He is a little bit intermissed because in the game before that he had 7 points, so there's that aspect. But for Bates, he shoots 36% from 3. Only guy on the team that gives you north of 5 rebounds per game as well, so that's going to be an issue down low against Peyton Sparks, who's able to give you 12 points, 8 boards, just under a block per contest. So we've seen his offense tail off for Sparks. 9 points or fewer in each out of the last 4 games. Still has been relatively solid with his rebounding tempo sports in each out of the last 2 contests, but for Ball State, I do think that that is a little bit of a liability, because Ball State, a little bit more of a controlled team. They've been pretty efficient on offense. They're a team that, in terms of total possessions per game, they're one of the slower teams in this conference, right in the neighborhood, about 230th. In terms of total possessions per game, you've got an Eastern Michigan team that they're clocking in at 54th in terms of possessions per game. But Ball State, even with their less than efficient defense, fair way of putting it, 214th in the country, in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, you should be able to gobble up an Eastern Michigan team as 358th nationally in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Eastern Michigan has been a tad bit better recently, but they really had no place to go. But up there is Jalen Sellers along with Jerron Coleman on the flip side for Ball State, who are able to combine for about 28 points in that pocket, about 9 rebounds. Coleman is able to give you 3.5 assists and a steal and a half per game, while Sellers shoots 48% for 3 for a Ball State team that, as a whole, they shoot 37.8% for 3. Coleman shoots 38.1% from the outside. Mikey Pearson, good versatility, 7 points, 5 boards, 6'7" combo player that's able to drain about 37.5% of his threes as well. But I do think that Eastern Michigan starting to turn over a little bit of a new leaf. They've won each of their last 2 games, and in the loss prior to that, on the road against Toledo, they lose that game by 5 points. Relatively respectable effort. Still a rough defense. They've given up at least 77 points in 4 of their last 5 games, but they are playing against a Ball State team that's looking to play a little bit more slow and controlled. They've given up 70 points or fewer in 3 out of their last 5 games. So, interesting look on the total here. I did set my total at a 151.5. I think that Eastern Michigan playing a touch better on defense. Not much better, but a touch better. And I made this number 11.5 as a result. So we'll take 12 plus here with Eastern Michigan and taking the 152.5 under. 867, 868 on the betting board. Manhattan, they play us to Siena. Siena is a 5 to 4.5 point favorite. And your total on this game is there between 135 and 135.5. And with Siena, I set them as a favorite of 4.5 points. 5 is my buy point on Manhattan, because I do think that Manhattan is going to be able to do a relatively solid job down low. I like what they've got in Josh Roberts. Came in from St. John's, 12.5 points, 9 rebounds per contest, and he's able to give you 2 blocks per game, and they're going to need him to take over down low, because this has been a Manhattan team that all season long has been rough with their defense. I think that that's the most polite way of putting it, and really, Manhattan has had a lot of mental miscues, as Manhattan, 255th in the country, turns points allowed on a per-possession basis, and very curiously, giving up 4.4 points more per 100 possessions at home rather than on the road. It is a Manhattan team that, I talk about miscues, 14.5 turnovers per game. They shoot about 34.8% from 3, which is relatively solid, but they also only shoot about 67% at the free throw line. Got a pair of guys in Ant Nelson along Samir Stewart, who have been very good primary scorers for this team, contributing 29.4 points, just under 8.5 assists per game, 3.3 steals, and you've got Stewart shooting 39.5% from 3. Ant Nelson, he shoots 30% from the outside with 4 turnovers. That's just absolutely unacceptable, to say the least. But a guy that's been a little bit banged up in Nick Brandon, he's been back in the fold. He's coming off of a nice 16-point performance against Canisius, 4-plus boards in each of the last 4 games, and this is a Siena squad that they're currently dealing with an injury to their top scorer in Javion McCollum. But without McCollum, this Siena team has won every one of their games. So there's a little bit of question mark as to whether or not he's going to play. I think that McCollum's going to be out of the fold, and this handicap is considering that he is out of the fold. But if he does play, it's not like I would give Siena too much of an upgrade just because they've been just fine without him. As a matter of fact, their defense has been really good without him. In the two games that they have played without him most recently, they give up 53 and 55 points. I recognize one of those games was against Maris, but the other game was against Iona. So they've been rock solid on that front. You do have Jackson Stormo down low, who's able to give you about 5.5 rebounds, 13.5 points per game. Andrew Playtech has shot 46% from three, 10.5 points per contest. And then you've got Michael Bayer along with Jared Billups combining for 12.5 rebounds per game. Bayer only gives you 4.5 points per game, but it is a Siena team that is starting to round into form a little bit more. Overall for the season, Siena, a less than efficient defense, but they're really starting to pick it up. They've now ascended into the top 95 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and they're actually giving up 0.2 of a point fewer per 100 possessions when they are on the road rather than at home. But I do think that Manhattan is going to be able to do a solid job on the interior coming off of a nice overtime win against Canisius. And you look at their three losses prior to that, they had lost by 6 points on the road against Niagara, they lose by 2 on the road to Ryder, and they take Iona to overtime. So I do like the way that this Manhattan team has been able to round into form. They, in terms of games that have wrapped up in regulation, have given up 70 points or fewer in pretty much all but one of them. They gave up, I believe, 71 in regulation against Canisius, so they've been able to do a solid job. This is a Siena team that has allowed 66 points or fewer in each of their last 5 games. So a situation where both of these teams rounding into form on that front, though I do think that you are going to be seeing a little bit more of an up-tempo style if you looked at both of these teams out of conference. Both of these teams were in the top half of the country in terms of total possessions per game, and I do think that we're going to get some late game fouling in this ordeal. So I did set my total at a 136.5 looking over with Manhattan. I like the way that they've turned over a new leaf. And for Siena, I do think that they're going to start to feel that loss a little bit without Javion McCollum, but I don't think that it's too big. So at 5 or more, we're going to take the points with Manhattan. And looking at this 135 over, 869, 870 on the betting board. Iona is going to be playing us to Mount St. Mary. So Mount is a 15-15.5 point underdog with your total between 135.5 and 136. And with the Mount, I set them as an underdog of 15.5 points. I'm going to be willing to lay 15 with Iona. Now, this Iona team has not been very profitable for you recently. You take a look at them, and they have failed to cover each other last 5 games after they were honestly really good against the spread to begin the season. But Mount St. Mary's also 7-13-1 against the spread, so it's not like they've been necessarily cashing tickets for you. It's a Mount St. Mary's team that they just can't generate any offense. The last time this Mount St. Mary's team was able to get past 65 points was all the way back on December 1st. So it's been 2 months since they've been able to exceed 65 points. Meanwhile, for Iona, this team has been able to get past 70 points in all but 3 of their 21 games this far this season. Problem is, all 3 of those instances have come in their last 7 games. So there is that aspect of it. It is an Iona team that has allowed at least 69 points in each of their last 5 games, but it is also a Mount St. Mary's team that they get their slow tempo. They're in the bottom 70 in terms of total possessions per game. Iona out of conference was a top 80 team in terms of possessions per game. Just given the competition in the Metro Atlantic, they're now more of a mid-tempo team. And for the Mount, you do honestly have 2 relatively solid scorers as Jalen Benjamin, coupled with Dakota LaFeu, have been able to combine for 28.2 points, 6 assists, both a 39.5% 3-point shooting percentage, so they've been able to do their part. George Tinsley, Malik Jefferson, these two guys have been able to combine for about 13 rebounds per game, though Jefferson has been dealing with ailment. You got to figure that he's going to be out of the fold. Once again, that has led to Mount St. Mary's having a little bit of difficulty on defense. They've now allowed 70-plus points in 2 out of their last 4 games, which is honestly pretty uncharacteristic for them. Meanwhile, you take a look at Iona, and now they've been dealing with injuries, but they've got most of their guys back in the fold. Quinn Slezniski has been missing for quite a while, but he doesn't really do a whole heck of a lot for Iona. I know that that's a little bit of a hot take, but it is what it is. You have Nelly Jr. Joseph, Dennis Jenkins, along with Walter Clayton. All these guys give between 15.3 and 15.6 points per contest. Jenkins and Clayton combined for 9 rebounds per game. Junior Joseph by himself gives you 9 rebounds per game. And then Jenkins and Junior Joseph, they combine for 2.6 steals per game. Honestly, the trio gives you about 4.4 steals per game. And Clayton, he shoots 98% of the free throw line, 39% from 3. Iona as a whole, they only shoot about 33% from the outside, but they only turn the ball over 10.5 times per game as well. They're one of the more efficient teams with that regard. And though Iona has been having a little bit of a tough time with their defense. This is still a pretty stifling defense. They rank 51st in the country towards the points allowed on a per possession basis, and when they're at home, they're allowing about 11.2 points fewer per 100 possessions than when they are in a road slash neutral court environment. Meanwhile, you've got a Mount St. Mary's team that, when they hit the road, they are giving up about 6 points more for 100 possessions. They're about 125th in terms of defensive efficiency. So it is a circumstance where I do think that Iona is going to be able to get past somebody in this spot. I do think that Iona is starting to get their wake-up calls, and I do think that they are going to be able to sort of restore order in this spot. I set my total at 135, so here between 135.5 and 136, I just don't think that the Mount is going to do quite enough on this total. I'm looking under, and with Iona, made them a 15.5-point favorite. 15 is the absolute max I'm willing to lay, but I'm willing to lay 15. 871, 872 on the betting board. Ryder is going to be playing us to St. Peter's, and St. Peter's is a 6.5 to a 7-point underdog. In your total, it is 127. I set my total at 125. I'm going to be looking at the under with St. Peter's. They're a bottom 40 team in terms of possessions per game, and Ryder, right around about 275th or so in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And for Ryder, I did make them the 8-point favorite because they've got the best player out there on the floor. That'd be Dwight Murray Jr., a human matrix in that he fills up every column of the stat sheet. 16.5 points, 3 assists, steal and a half per contest, shooting 36.5% from 3. Ryder as a whole, they're going to shoot about 32% from the outside, but in a late game fouling situation, you can feel very good about this team. They shoot 75.9% as a collective, and each of their top five scorers shoot at least 76% at the free throw line. Alan Bentren has been a relatively solid three-point shooter. Only gives you 7 points per game, but shoots 36% from three-point range. You've been able to get a little bit down low of Ajiri Anguemo Johnson, 6 points, 5.5 rebounds per game, but he's been a little bit inconsistent on that front. But St. Peter's, for what they do on defense, they don't have anyone that gives you north of 5 rebounds per game, and that would be Latrell Reed that does so. He's a 6'3", little bit of a do-it-all sort of player, 6 points, 5 boards, 3.8 assists, 1.3 steals per contest. The backcourt of Jalen Murray and Isaiah Dasher has had to do darn near all the scoring for this team, as these two gentlemen have been able to combine for 26 points, about 6.5 rebounds. They both shoot between 34.5 and 36.5% from 3-point range, and Murray is able to give you 2.5 assists per game, but you really don't get anyone that's able to give you some rock-solid contributions. Kyle Kardashian, who came in from Coppin State, has been a little bit banged up, and when he has been out there, he has been highly inconsistent. And you just take a look at this Peacocks team. They're coming off of a nice 73-point sizzler against Mount St. Mary's. That's the first time they were able to break the 70-point plateau in over a month, though. As a matter of fact, that was the first time that they had gotten past 61 points in the month of January. This has been a St. Peter's team that has been all sorts of awful with their offense. Meanwhile, you've got a Ryder team that they come in winners of 5 straight games. Their last game against Fairfield went to overtime. If you look in regulation, they had allowed just 65 points, so that means that they have allowed 67 points or fewer in all but one of their games, really since the turn of the month of January in regulation. So I do like the way that they are locking down. I think that St. Peter's going to have an almighty struggle of being able to put the ball in the basket. I do think that St. Peter's is going to be able to hold up on defense, about 140th in the country, turns points a lot on a per possession basis, as opposed to a Ryder team that overall is about 200th, but Ryder has been playing significantly better on defense recently. So I did set Ryder as an 8-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number, made my total 125. I think St. Peter's is going to be stuck in mud in this game, so looking at the under, I'm willing to lay it with Ryder. 873, 874 on the betting board. It is Quinnipiac. They play out to Fairfield. Fairfield's between a 4.5 and a 5-point underdog, with your total between 136.5 and 137. I made my total 130.5. I recognize that Quinnipiac is one of the more up-tempo teams in this conference in terms of sheer possessions per game. Ranks right around 155th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but how are we setting this high of a total in Fairfield games? Fairfield is a halfway decent defense with a team that is 325th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and it's a Quinnipiac bunch that I recognize that their offense is pretty solid, but so is their defense. 60th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Interesting that they give up 5.6 points more per 100 possessions when they're at home rather than on the road, but it's a Fairfield team that they themselves brought 125th in terms of defensive efficiency, so I do think that this is going to be a low-scoring slog. I'm going to be taking a look at the under, and for Fairfield, you've got Caleb Fields in the backcourt. He's been able to do a solid job, giving you right around 2 assists, 12 points per contest, dealt with a little bit of an injury, he's back, but hasn't been much to his team. They shoot 28% from 3-point range. You really don't have anyone that's active that gives you more than 3.5 points per game. That shoots above 30% from 3-point range. I guess TJ Long shoots about 31% from three-point range with 10 points per game, but man, it's relatively grody for the team. And Supreme Cook is really good down low with 8.5 boards, 13 points per game. He is one of just two players on the roster that give you north of 3.6 rebounds per game, so they get decimated there against a Quinnipiac team in which you've got everyone rebounding for this team. Each of your top five scorers give you at least 3.9 rebounds per game. That includes guards Desi Jones and Matt Planich. They've been able to combine for 23 points, 8.3 boards. Jones chips in their 3.8 assists per game, and he's able to shoot 41% from three. Quinnipiac as a whole does shoot 64.5% of the free throw line. If you do have trepidation with laying the number, that's it. But they do shoot 35.5% from three-point range. Paulo Tino down low comes in for the JUCO ranks. 7.5 boards, 8 points per contest. Timu Chenery is a very good freak athlete that's only giving you 6 points per game, but does shoot 35% from three. Ike Nikwe is a 6'7" combo player. 10.5 points, 6 rebounds per game. And this Quinnipiac team has really been able to get things going. They did have that loss on the road to Iona, but past that, they've been able to do a pretty solid job scoring at least 70 points in each of the last three games. But for this defense, aside from really two hiccups, they had one against Canisius and they had one also against Iona. This has been a bunch that has really been able to do a good job of holding down opponents, giving up 66 points or fewer in six out of their last eight games. It's a Fairfield team that they themselves have not broken 70 points very recently. The last time they've been able to get to that 70-point plateau, you have to go back to the calendar year of 2022. So, circumstance where I did set my total at a 130.5, I'm diving under with Quinnipiac. I think that they just have this Fairfield team completely outgunned. Make Quinnipiac the 8-point favorite, so want to lay the number, and I'm going to be taking a look at this total under as well. 875, 876 on the betting board. It is VCU. They have third to face out against St. Louis. St. Louis is a 2.5 to 2-point favorite, and your total on this game is there between 141 and 141.5 with St. Louis. Made them a 2-point favorite. 2.5 is my buy point on VCU. The only reason why I really made St. Louis a slight favorite in this game is that they've got by far the best player on the floor. That'd be Yuri Collins. He leads all of college basketball in terms of assists per game. Now, he has seen a little bit of fall in the amount of steals that he's been able to get, and really, that's been the bugaboo for St. Louis, a St. Louis team that's now outside the top 140 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and now they have to go up against a top 25 defense in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis in VCU, and it should be an interesting chess match, because with Yuri Collins, one of the most efficient guards in all of college basketball, he does turn the ball over 3.3 times per game, but you know what? Dishing out over 10 assists per game and shooting 35% from 3 on 12 points per contest, that'll offset that very, very nicely, but it's a VCU team that, in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, they're back in the top 20 with that regard, with Ace Baldwin, who gives you 2.2 steals, shoots 37% from 3, 12 points per contest out of him, and they've been able to do a little bit of better job of rebounding VCU has, as Brandon Johns, along with Jaden DeLoach, throwing their Jameer Watkins, this trio of guys has been able to give you a combined about 17.5 rebounds per game. DeLoach has been able to also give you a block and a half per game. Watkins shoots about 32% from 3 with his 10 points per contest. You've been able to get a bit more recently out of the Hartford transfer. David Shriver was a little bit of rough going for him to begin the season, but you know what? He's been able to contribute a little bit more recently at a 9-rebound game against UMass a few weeks ago, so I like the way that he's been able to come along for the ride, and then I think that Jaden Nunn is going to be a big X factor. He's able to give you 9 points per contest. He's been a little bit inconsistent with his scoring, but coming off of a 3-assist, 3-block game against St. Bonaventure about a week ago, it is a VCU team that is incredibly deep, and for St. Louis, you just don't know what you're going to be able to get night in and night out of the ancillary pieces around Collins. You've got Javonte Perkins, Javon Pickett, and Gibson Jimerson. This trio of guys has been able to combine for about 34.5 points per game. You have Pickett, who's able to give you 5 boards. None of these guys really do any facilitating, and you expect these guys to shoot really well from 3, and it's not like they've been terrible, but they combine to shoot about 34.5 to 35% from 3. You honestly need more around 37 to 38% to be efficient. You've had Francis Okoro chip in there 8.5 rebounds per game. He's been able to do a solid job on that front, but Fred Thatch Jr. has been a little bit banged up on what he has been out there. He hasn't necessarily delivered a whole heck of a lot. He should be out of the fold once again in this one. So I do think that St. Louis, just because they do have the most efficient guard out there, should be able to get the job done. And it is a St. Louis team that is coming along for the ride with their defense. 71 points or fewer surrendered in 3 out of their last 4 games. It is a VCU team that is really doing a good job of putting the clamps down. 62 points or fewer surrendered in each of their last 5. So it is a situation of something's got to give. And I did set my total at 138. I'm diving under. I think St. Louis, in the end, just having a little bit of better shooting, they're able to win outright, but I could only set them as a 2-point favorite, so 2.5 or more, taking the points with VCU and riding with this total under. 877, 878 on the betting board. It is Princeton. They play out Cornell. Cornell is a underdog of 2.5 to 3 points, and your total is between 156.5 and 157.5, and with Princeton, made them a 3-point favorite, I'm going to be willing to lay the number. The last time these two teams played, Princeton was able to do a solid job of holding down Cornell. Cornell has not been held down ever since then, because You take a look at the games they have played ever since they played against Princeton, and they have gotten to at least 80 points in all four of them. But that said, Cornell lost on their home floor to Princeton by a count of 75-68 in a game in which Cornell shot 10 of 27 from three-point range. It's not like they had a cold shooting night or anything like that. Princeton has been able to do a good job of being able to slow teams down this year, and it's a little bit of a new-look Princeton team. It's obviously a team that runs, you guess it, the Princeton offense. But that said, Princeton about 225th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. They go up against Cornell team that absolutely looks to run it and gun it. Cornell 34th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and on a roadside shoot court environment, they actually play at a tempo about three possessions greater than they do at home for Cornell. Defense leaving something to be desired. 236th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and I think that that's the X factor here. Princeton is now a top 100 defense in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Ironically, they're actually giving up 4.2 points more per 100 possessions when they're at home rather than on the road. But Tucson of Omen, I think, is going to be a matchup nightmare for this Cornell team. First time around, he had 15 points, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. He's a 6'8.4 that's been able to average for the year. 4.5 assists, 6 boards, 13.5 points per game, and he's surrounded by shooters. As you've got Matt Alico, I really like. He's been able to contribute 10.5 points. Shoots 42.5% for 3. He had double figures the first time around. First time around, Langbert had 20 points. Langbert overall for the year, shooting about 34% for 3 after last year. He shot 40% from distance, but he's had double figures in each of the last 5 games. Contributes 12 points per game himself. And for Cornell, it is a team that is very willing to go about 9 or 10 deep. You've got Greg Dolan it out. Absolutely love his game. 13 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, 1.7 steals while shooting over 50. Count it, 50% from three-point range. He has been absolutely magnificent on that front. It is a Cornell team that they are dealing with a little bit of an injury, though, as one of their top scorers is most likely going to be out of the fold in this one. Nazir Williams, who's been able to give the team 13 points per contest, missed the team's last game. He's a 39% three-point shooter for Cornell team that they're going to be able to absorb that blow. They shoot as a collective 37.5% from three. They still got the win against Brown. I think that they were about a point away from covering, so that was a little bit rough for them. But with how up-tempo they play, they don't have a single guy that gives you more than 4.5 rebounds per game, which I find to be intriguing, but you pretty much have 5 separate guys that give you between 3.7 and 4.5 rebounds per game, so they do a good job of being able to rebound by committee. They get 10 steals per game, but even though Cornell has all that depth, I do think that Williams dealing with injury is something that you do want to be taking note of, and this is a Princeton offense that has been able to do a very solid job in their own right. They've been able to get to at least 70 points in now 4 out of their last 5 games. Defense just continuing to stifle teams. They are coming off of a rough one against Yale where they gave up 87 points in that game. Yale went 14 of 21 from three-point range. It was just a complete outlier of a performance, and I do think that Princeton actually plays Cornell quite well. I like Princeton to be able to get the season sweep in this one. I set them as a 3-point home favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the 2.5 that I'm seeing right now with Princeton. I did make my total 151 as well. I do think that Princeton going to be able to get a little bit more of their tempo in this game, so diving under, and I'm going to be willing to lay it with Princeton. 879, 880 on the betting board. Penn is going to be playing us to Columbia. Columbia is a 14-14.5 point underdog with your total between 144.5 and 145, and with Penn, I did set them as a 15.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Jordan Dingle, he has been doing absolutely amazing work for this Penn team. A top 5 score in all of college basketball, 23.8 points, 2.5 assists, shooting 35.5% from 3-point range. The top 3 scores for Penn, by the way, all shoot at least 85% of the free throw line. So if this were to come down to free throw shooting, which on this big of a spread, it shouldn't, you could rest assured there. So that is something that you like Nick Spinoza to be able to do a solid job down low and just does all of the grimy work for Penn. 8 points, 5.5 boards, 3.5 assists. I love teams that have a glue guy like this. Max Martz is a 43.5% 3-point shooter that chips in their 10.5 points, 4 boards per contest. Clark Slayshirt, he's been a nice ancillary scorer with 14.5 points per game as well. And this is a Columbia team that ranks in the bottom 75 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. And you can't have that when you've also got a defense that has its falters as well. In terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, it is a Columbia that is 261st in the country as well. They've been really banking out a lot of freshmen along with Geronimo Rubio De La Rosa. And De La Rosa has had to do a little bit of everything. 13 points, 5.5 boards, 2.8 assists, Elon Apricontas, and does shoot 39% from 3. If they could put anything around him, that'd be nice. They've had Blair Thompson, their freshman, chip in there at 7 points, four boards. Doesn't really feel like he's ascending. Zion Adine Badiri, who comes in from Algeria, he's been able to average overall for the year 8 points, 4.5 rebounds per game, and has been able to give the team double figures in four of the last five games, but he's become a little bit unplayable because he gets in all sorts of foul trouble. He's fouled out of two of the last four games, so that has been a big giant issue. Liam Murphy is someone that the team was banking on. He's been banged up, and he has been able to return a combined 25 points in the last two contests. That's big. He was a double-figure scorer with about five rebounds per game last year, so that's something that you do like to see, but Columbia just has not been able to put it together in any form of basketball, and all of a sudden, their defense has went completely down the toilet bowl. To their credit, they've been able to score at least 73 points in each of their last three games, but they've now allowed at least 83 in four of their last five games. That includes getting dump-trucked by Penn about 3 weeks ago by a count of 84-55. They let Dingle go off for 33 points in that one. Now, Penn, I don't think, is going to duplicate 15 of 23 from three-point range, much like they did the first time around, but something I do think they're going to be able to do is to cut down on the turnovers. They actually lost the turnover battle by a count of 17-13. This is a Columbia team that they themselves are not necessarily super-duper turnover-prone, but still 14 turnovers per game for a team that's relatively mid-tempo. It's a Penn team that they're looking to play a little bit faster, but it's not like they're necessarily running it and gunning it. I think that you're going to see a lot of what we saw the first time around. Certainly, I don't think we're going to see quite as hot of shooting. I do think that Columbia is not going to have that bad of shooting variance. I did sub a total at 143.5 just because I don't think that Columbia is going to hold up their end of the bargain. I think that they're probably going to be held to more around 60 or so in this game. So I'm looking at the under, but that said, with Penn, set them as a 15.5 point favorite. I think that they give Columbia another beatdown. So we'll delay the number, and I'm going to be taking a look at this total under 881, 882 on the betting board. Niagara is going to be playing as Canisius. Canisius, a 4-4.5 point underdog in your total. It is between 131 and 131.5. I said Niagara a 5-point favorite, so we'll delay 4-4.5 with them. It is a Niagara team that is playing at a turtle's pace, as they're in the bottom 15 in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game, but they have by far the best score out there on the floor. Noah Thomason, 18.5 points, 3.7 boards, 3.4 assists, shooting 39% from 3-4. A Niagara team as a whole, they shoot 35.8% from 3-point range. You got a pair of guys down low and Sam Oreo along with Aaron Gray that have done a nice job being able to contribute in that pocket, about 21.5 points, 10.5 rebounds per game. So I like what both of these guys are able to deliver. And we've got Oreo shooting 48.5% from 3-point range. He doesn't score a lot, but Bryce Moore has been able to shoot about 38.5% from the outside, dealing with a little bit of ailment. I think that he's probably going to be out of the fold. He played just 6 minutes in the team's last game against Manhattan before leaving. But that said, you've got a Canisius team that they were relatively up-tempo out of conference. Things have been throttled down a little bit more just with the competition that they're playing. So now, in terms of total possessions per game, they're down to more like 117th. And it is a Canisius team that they're still playing relatively rough on defense, 286th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. But in the month of January, it was better. Allowed 67 points or fewer in five out of their last eight games last month. So give them a little bit of credit where credit is due. You've got Taj Stavosky along with Jordan Henderson. These two guys have been able to combine for about 24.5 points per contest for Canisius Bunch. They shoot about 34.5% from three. Henderson does shoot 34% from the outside. And for Canisius, each of your top three scorers should at least 82.5% at the free throw line, with Jameer Moultrie, who comes in from Kennesaw State, give you 10 points per game. But he doesn't give you anything on the boards, doesn't really facilitate, doesn't grab a lot of steals. You've got Yako Fritz, Xavier Long, combining for about 12 rebounds per game. But they're really the only two guys that hit the glass for this team, so that becomes a bit of an issue. And for this Canisius Bunch, they come in losers of three straight games, with their offense being powered down just a little bit. This team has, in regulation, because their game against Manhattan went to overtime, they have scored 66 points or fewer in three out of their last five games. Meanwhile, it is a Niagara team that they're just doing an amazing job of being able to guard all these teams. The last time they gave up north of 70 points, you have to go all the way back to when they played Iona on December 2nd, and I do think that they're going to continue the demise currently of this Canisius team. I was willing to lay up to five with Niagara, so here at 4-4.5, I'm going to be willing to lay the number. And when it comes to total, I set my number at a 127. I do think that Niagara going to get their slow and grimy pace. So looking at the under and looking to lay it with Niagara, 883, 884 is a DK Nation pick. You got San Diego State playing against Boise State. Boise State is a 7-point underdog with your total 134, and very befuddling. I set San Diego State as a 2.5-point favorite. I don't know if it's just me, but every time I turn on San Diego State, I'm not necessarily too impressed. They've cranked up their tempo. They're now more of a mid-tempo team, and they do have a pair of guys in Matt Bradley and Darian Trammell who have been able to do a solid job contributing about 24.5 points, 6 assists per game as a whole. It's the San Diego State team that they shoot 36% from 3, but Boise State does everything better than San Diego State. I'm not even kidding when I say that. It's a Boise State team that they shoot in the top 65 in terms of three-point shooting percentage. San Diego State more around 125th, as it's a Boise State team that they shoot about 37.5% from the outside, with Max Rice along with Chuzu Ogbo being able to lead the way. Ogbo and Rice have been able to combine for about 25.5 points. They both shoot above 42% from three-point range. Tyson Dagenhart along with Rice, Ogbo, and Shaver all give you between 4.8 and 6.3 rebounds per game, with Marcus Shaver 13.2 points, 6.3 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 1.7 steals per contest. This Boise State team is 8th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and they travel in a road-slash-shoot-to-court environment. They're in the top 6 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Boise State has allowed north of 71 points, I believe, just twice all season long in regulation, because they did have that game against New Mexico that did go to overtime. But, I mean, this team has been so incredible with that regard. They have not allowed more than 74 points in regulation all season long. Meanwhile, you got a San Diego State team that has allowed 75-plus points in 3 out of their last 5 games. That is not San Diego State basketball. I recognize that the offense is a little bit better. You still have a guy down low, Nathan Menza, that's able to give you 6 rebounds per game. But Boise State doing a relatively solid job of taking care of the ball. They don't necessarily generate a bunch of turnovers, but for Boise State, they allow opponents to corral about 21% of their misses. They're in the top 10 in all of college basketball in terms of defensive rebound rate. They're a top 10 team in terms of being able to cut off the three-point arc, which is really a hallmark of San Diego State, with Micah Parrish being able to drain some threes. I think Boise State is going to be able to hang in this game. I'm not willing to take Boise State out right here. I did set them as a 2.5-point underdog because going to the VAIS Center, it is relatively rough. I do think that San Diego State gets the job done on their home floor, but 7 seems very aggressive for a San Diego State team. That has not impressed me one bit. I set my total at 131.5. I think Boise State, a team that is about 250th in terms of total possessions per game, and a San Diego State team that has throttled down in Mountain West play, are going to be playing a little bit of a lower scoring slog. So looking at the under, my DK Nation pick, that's on Boise State. 885, 886 on the betting board. Akron is going to be playing against Kent State. Kent State is a 1-2 point underdog, and your total on this game, it is between 132.5 and 133. I disagree. I set Kent State as a 2-point favorite. I'm going to be one to take them outright on the money line. Kent State, a top 30 team nationally in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and a lot of it is because of the turnovers that they create. They get over 15.5 turnovers per game. That ranks in the top 20 in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis on defense, and a big reason why Malik Jacobs in the top 5 nationally in terms of steals per game with 2.8, chips in their 5 boards, 3.3 assists, 12 points per contest. Doesn't necessarily shoot it well from 3-point range, neither does their main scorer, Insincere Carey. He's only shooting about 28.5% from 3, but Carey, he carries the team. 5 assists, 1.7 steals, 17 points per game. You've got Marion Thomas, a 6'8 combo player that gives you 11 points. He shoots 35% from 3. You do have a good sharp shooter in Jalen Sullinger, shooting 48.5% from the outside. He gives you 8.5 points per game. Silron Hornbeek is able to give you 6 rebounds per game. Just so many guys match up with now. Akron has 2 main headline guys that are going to be terrific, including the best low post presence in this game, Enrique Freeman, 15 points, 10.5 rebounds per game, and Xavier Castaneda, 21 points per contest. He shoots 40% from 3-point range. He's the best sheer offensive weapon in this game, and it is an Akron team that they do a solid job with their defense as well. Kent State is a better defense, but Akron is not chopped liver. 58th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and it is an Akron team that is looking to play a little bit more slowly than this Kent State team. Akron about 267th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You've got a Kent State bunch that they're hovering right around about 125th in the country with regards to possessions per game, but you just don't have as many ancillary pieces with this Akron team. You need to get a little bit more out of someone like a Craig Tribble. He's only been able to give you about 6.5 points per game. He has given the team a combined 17 points in the last 4 contests. Trendon Ankerson gives you 9 points, 4.5 boards, shoots 37% from 3. Akron as a whole, they do shoot 35% from the outside, but I really do think that this is a put-up or shut-up time for both of these teams. Kent State, they have allowed 69 points or fewer in 7 out of their last 9 games. It is an Akron team that they've been able to get going with their offense at least 69 points in 4 out of their last 5 games. Good old situation of something's got to give, but I do think that in the end, Kent State is going to be the team that forces more turnovers. I do think that this is going to be a hard-nosed game, and I do think that Kent State gets a little bit more of their style, and I do think that this comes down to late-game fouling, so despite having good defenses, I'm willing to go over on 132.5, semi-total 133, so 132.5 is a max I'm willing to go over on, but but I'm willing to go over. And with Kent State, made them the 2-point favorite, so I'm going to bypass the points, take them on the money line. 887, 888 on the betting board. UNLV is going to be playing against Fresno State. Fresno State, a 9.5 to a 10-point underdog. With your total between 131 and 132, I'm with UNLV. Set them as a 10-point favorite. 9.5 is the max I'm willing to lay, but I'm going to be willing to lay it. Last time these two teams met, UNLV went on the road and they lost by a count of 76-63. That was with Isaiah Moore out of the fold. And for Fresno State, I honestly thought that they were playing better while Eduardo Andre 3000 was getting the main reps down low in that game. He had 16 points, 13 rebounds. He had a trio of games where he had 12-plus rebounds and 13-plus points in all of them. Ever since Moore has come back to the fold, he has had a combined 7 points and 5 rebounds in the last two games, and the team has scored a hearty 62 and 53 points, losing both of those games by 15-plus points. Fresno State needs to move on from Isaiah Moore, in my opinion, who is the team's top scorer with 12 points per game, but whenever he's out there on the court, this team just doesn't necessarily do the world's greatest job. I do recognize that they won against New Mexico with them, but that said, maybe it's a little bit of a hot take, but I felt like they were a little bit better with Andre 3000 out there on the court, because this is a Fresno State team that they have nothing to speak of in the backcourt. They shoot 28.5% from three-point range, for that matter, more, despite the fact that he's like 6'10", 6'11", he's actually like the best three-point shooter on this team. You've only got one other guy in Anthony Holland who gives you 6.5 points per game that shoots a better three-point shooter shooting percentage than he does at 38.5%. You need to get a little bit more out of these guys. Jamarrell Baker is able to give you about 10.5 points per game. You've got Isaiah Hill giving you the same as well. And for UNLV, I don't think that they're going to allow Fresno State to go 9 of 19 from three-point range, much like they did the first time around. UNLV won the turnover battle the first time around, 13-7, but they lost that rebound battle by a count of 33-23, and I do think that they're going to be able to reverse grip with Moore back in the fold, as you've got EJ Harkless along with Luis Rodriguez, a pair of versatile guys who are able to give you a combined 29 points, but 10.8 rebounds, 3.7 steals per game, and Rodriguez is someone that's able to shoot about 32.5% from three-point range, was dealing with a little bit of an ailment, and he only played 10 minutes in that game against Fresno State. Returned for the most recent tilt against Colorado State, looked like himself, so that's very big. Keyshawn Gilbert, he shoots 42% from three-point range with 12 points per game. It is a UNLV team that, towards the beginning part of the season, they had a lot of success out of conference because they were hanging their head on defense. It is now a team that, in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, is about 76th, but it feels like they're starting to get back to those roots where they were in the top 40 out of conference. Meanwhile, you got a Fresno State team that they're in the bottom 20 nationally in terms of total possessions per game, yet in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, they're about 175th. Just a really bad blend, especially when you're not able to shoot threes. In the most recent games ever since that UNLV win, Fresno State has not been able to exceed 62 points in any of those games. And for that matter, it is a Fresno State team that has scored 64 points or fewer in now 7 out of their last 8 games. UNLV, they have now allowed 72 points or fewer in each of their last 3 games since that Fresno State loss. So I do think that both of these teams are turning in opposite directions. I did set my total at 128, and as a result, diving under with UNLV, willing to lay up to 9.5 with them in a revenge spot. And we wrap things up with 889, 890 on the betting board. Nevada plays host to Air Force. Air Force is an 11.5 point underdog. Your total on this game is 133. And with Air Force, set them as a 12.5 point underdog. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. It is a Nevada team that the first time around, honestly, it was much more dominant than the final score would indicate. They won by a count of 75-69, but if you take a look at this game, they were up by double figures for darn near north of 50% of it. Air Force was able to make a little bit of a charge late in that game. You saw both teams be able to shoot it well from three. Air Force went 9 of 21 from distance. Nevada, 6 of 14 from three-point range. It was a rather slow and controlled game with a bunch of free throw shooting, so I do think that that is something to take a look at. Nevada was able to win the battle on the glass, and I certainly do think that they're going to be able to do that this time around. Now, Nevada only has one guy that gives you north of 5.1 rebounds per game, and that'd be their freshman, Adarion Williams, who does it all. 6.9 points, 7.2 rebounds, 2.5 assists per game, 1.5 steals. I absolutely love his overall game, just does whatever is needed for the team. But the guy that I really like in terms of the backcourt is Jared Lucas. He's been able to shoot 38% from 3, 17.5 points per game. Then you've got Keenan Blackshear, give you 15 points, 4.5 boards, 4.5 assists per game. If you take a look at the first time around, you had Lucas chip in there, 28 points. Blackshear was doing all that he was doing, and 7-footer Will Baker, he was able to do a nice job with 16 points and didn't even pop any threes, which is a nice specialty of him. Meanwhile, for Air Force, it's much of what we've been seeing all season long. They were relying upon Jake Heidbreder in that that game. He had 22 points in overall for the season. Heidbreder, 13.5 points, 3.5 boards, shooting 36% from three. And Air Force, they've cut down on the turnovers there, turning the ball over about 11.5 times per game. The defense is quite a bit more efficient this year than it has been in past years. Air Force, once again, playing at a bottom 30 tempo in terms of possessions per game. They're about 188th in the country. In terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, a tad bit better than a season ago. Meanwhile, Nevada, significantly better with their defense in the top 100 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis after they were relatively putrid a season ago. And when it comes to Ryan Petras, he's been able to do a good job down low for Air Force. 10.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. The problem is he's the only active player for this team that is currently giving you north of 3.5 rebounds per game, and that is where they're going to be completely outgunned. Even with someone like Camden Vanderzweig, who's able to shoot 39% from 3, 8 points per game, I do think that Nevada is going to be able to really take it to Air Force. I don't think that Air Force shoots north of 40% from 3-point range like they did the first time around. It is an Air Force team that they've been having a relatively rough go of it recently. Losers of 4 straight games. They've been able to hang in quite a few of those games. They lose by New Mexico by single digits. They lose to Boise State by single digits. San Diego State by 10. But this is a Nevada team that they're really taking off. They're doing a nice job with their defense. Sans that just insane double overtime game that we saw with New Mexico, they've been able to do a good job of holding 3 out of their last 5 opponents to under 70 points. And I certainly do think that they're going to do a good job holding down an Air Force team of what I think is going to be a slow and controlled game with much worse shooting than we saw the first time around. Set my total 128.5, diving under with Nevada, willing to lay up to 12 of them, and that will wrap things up for the Friday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. If you do like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to further this in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season. And that means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.